This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live online at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock. Ezra Ginsberg is on holidays for the next couple weeks. We're not 100% sure why, but okay.
Is that applause? Did Timmy sink that applause?
Yes, that as he's away. Exactly right. Michael Remus joining us in studio, and producer Tim getting us on and off the air like the expert that he is. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Coming up in about 30 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by the agent for Brian Little, Anton Thun. He's the managing director of M5 Sports. He's going to join us to talk about the new contract between Brian Little and the Winnipeg Jets. At the top of the next hour, the Blake Wheeler conference call. As you may or may not know, Blake Wheeler signed a long-term deal with the Winnipeg Jets late last night. 6 years, $33 million. We'll be bringing you that conference call live at 11 a.m. here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We start with that signing, the Blake Wheeler signing with the Winnipeg Jets. 6 years, $33 million, salary cap hit of $5.6 million per season. Richard Pollock, your initial thoughts on that deal?
Yeah, it's interesting, Drew. I think overall my thoughts are that it's a little bit of an overpay. Just based on the numbers analysis I did, I thought that the amount of money per year that he got was a little bit higher than I expected. And the term he got actually was a little bit higher than I expected. So I thought overall it was an overpay. Was it the most blatant overpay of all time? No. And doesn't mean I don't like Blake Wheeler as a player. Just means that you're paying him big time cash here. So he better be. And the stats indicate in the past 2 years he's been, you know, up there. But the question is he, you know, in line with the other guys making that big cash, and can he carry this forward, you know, through his late 20s?
You know, the numbers, you mentioned the numbers, look, last 2 years, it's definitely been in the upper half of right wingers in terms of his point production. Now, the question is that enough? You know, is he the guy that can propel the Winnipeg Jets further, never mind just to the playoffs, but long-term deeper into the playoffs? Because, I mean, the Jets are counting on him to be their number one right winger for the next, you know, 5 or 6 years.
Well, no, they're counting on him to be, I'm going to elaborate on that further, Drew. They're counting on him to be their best player, their best forward, because they're paying him as such. They're paying him more than Little, more than Kane, more than Ladd. They're paying him the big bucks to be the best forward on the team, as far as I'm concerned. And so the question is can you win? You know, depending on what Ladd, obviously Ladd and Kane are factoring in this too. I don't think Little as much. You know, and the development of Scheifele and such, we can talk about at a later date. But the question is Blake Wheeler, you know, is your team... Is Blake Wheeler being your best player, second best player on your squad, third maybe, good enough to take your team far? That's the question.
Well, if you look at the numbers, the numbers last year were 19 goals, 22 assists, 41 points in the abbreviated season, 93 goals, 139 assists, 232 career points in 372 career games. You know, the last couple of years, he's been one of the better right wingers, and... You know, we said it last week when, and we said it off air, you know, to one another, of course, when we did our mock arbitration hearings last week.
Yep.
Just strictly by the numbers and by everything else, Blake Wheeler had a pretty good case against the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, we said that, and we've said that all along. You know, he had a good case against the Jets, so I don't think arbitration was scaring him off. Having said that, I feel like when you go to 6 years, you should get a little bit of a deal on the cap hit. Isn't that the point? Longer the term, the lower the cap hit?
Generally
speaking. I feel like he got his cake and he ate it too.
Well, it's a good deal from Blake Wheeler's perspective.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's it. That's your big deal. That's the big contract of your career, likely. You know, on the other side of 30, will he get a deal like that? I don't know. But this is the big contract. I mean, he's getting, if you look at the cap, he gives you those salary cap hit comparables. And the guys who are on the list, there's 20 players. St. Louis, Tavares, Eliash, Alfredson, Nathan Horton, Hossa, Krejci, you know, Kane, Skinner. I mean, these are the, you know, the creme de la creme, aside from the Crosby-Malkin group and Kopitar and those guys.
This is the best of the second tier.
Yeah. That's right.
Is he in the is he one of the best of the second tier?
Well, that's a good question.
I mean, we've watched him for the last 2 years. Did he strike you? I mean, he had very good numbers last year, and he had pretty good numbers the year before. Did he strike you as the kind of guy?
Well, I mean, do it this way then. I like to do it this way because, you know, people talk about the Jets, this and that, and then I think when you look at their schedule, you say, you look at who they're playing and you say, well, should they beat them? And then you think, oh, maybe they're not as good as I perceive them to be. If you look at this list, I mean, you're taking them over how many of these guys?
I don't know if I would take them over that many of those guys, but I think when you look at Blake Wheeler, he's definitely an interesting talent. I mean, he's a really big guy, and he's a great skater. I think he's got, you know, above average hands. But the one thing is he doesn't use his size. But going to this contract, he's 26 years old, so you're buying him for six of his prime season. So I think if you're the Jets, you're definitely hoping there's some improvement, and he can definitely build upon what he's put together. And look, he's been great for stretches where he has definitely been the best player on the team. But I think the major issue for him is consistency, because there'll be some games where he's not putting up the points that he's not playing like the game that he has in other games.
That's a fair point, Remus. And I think, you know, you talk about being that best player or being a good player like that. You know, the Jets right now, as they have it, with Little's contract, which we'll talk about next segment, and with Wheeler and with Ladd, you're paying this line the same as you're paying, you know, Bergeron, Marchand, and Iginla, or you're paying Krejci, Eriksson, and Lucic.
Right.
So the question is, can this line go up against teams like that and beat them?
This is the team for the Winnipeg Jets for the next 5 years. You know, barring any trades.
The next few years, Drew, this is probably the core, and then you have to bank on the draft picks. Because,
right.
I mean, they're going to be, after the Bogosian signing, they're going to be about a mil or two from the cap.
They're a cap hit. They're a cap team. I mean, they are, exactly. Assuming, you know, Bogosian gets somewhere in the vicinity of what we expect him to get.
Well, based on these two contracts, they're not underpaying him.
No.
I don't think.
Do you buy the argument that you have to, the Jets have to overpay people to stay in Winnipeg at this point?
I don't buy
Is there
that.
Enough evidence to say that?
I mean, I don't know if that's why they're doing it. I mean, is Sheveldayoff signing these guys to contracts, I think, are a little bit too high because of the Winnipeg factor, or is this just the way he does things? I don't know. I honestly don't know. I can't tell because there haven't been other GMs here yet.
Sure. That's a fair point. I mean, you look at Wheeler and you look at the numbers. I mean, can he take this team deep into the playoffs? Does he have that skill set? Is he a number one line right winger on a, not just a playoff team, but on a very good playoff team?
I mean, it depends, right? I mean, if he's a number one line right winger, you know, if Jonathan Toews is there, sure. I mean, of course. I mean, it depends on who he's with, right? Can he take him to that next level? I mean, you're also paying in a lot of these guys. There are wingers on here, but there's a lot of centers too, which is a factor, right? So, I mean, it goes both ways in that respect. He had them in a bargaining position such that he could take him to arbitration, probably beat him in arbitration, and then go to the open market. My question for you guys is this. If Blake Wheeler takes him to arbitration, goes to the open market next year, notwithstanding the fact that the Jets would probably trade him instead of losing nothing, would he have got a contract any more of 6 years, 33.6?
You would think it would be somewhere in that range, I think. I mean,
Would it have been any more, I'm wondering? Like, did he get any discount for the RFA year?
Maybe, but probably. I mean, for the RFA
year, he got more of the money than Horton.
Yeah,
he got more money than Horton. Horton's on a 7-year deal at 5.3. Well, there's a 6-year deal at 5.6, and that was the open market. Like, that was just anybody can bid on him.
There's obviously no discount on the RFA year.
I mean, that's what I mean.
I mean, there is no discount. You would think that's where Chevy would sort of get, you know, maybe instead of paying him 5.6 in the RFA year, it's, you know, it's a $4 million.
And the other thing, let me get in there, Drew, for a second. The other thing is, you know, Wheeler's, what, 26? Yeah, he's 26 years old right now. I mean, there are people who tell you that the perception is that the prime is kind of like, you know, 25, 26 to like 30, around there. There are other people who will tell you the prime is actually 23 to 26. So it goes both ways there, too.
Yeah, but this isn't a guy who's, I mean,
it's not washed up, Drew. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, is this the peak?
I don't think the Jets are going to regret this contract to any great degree at any point during the contract. I don't think, like, you look at some of the other contracts that were signed this year.
You're not paying a bum. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, like, you look at some of the other contracts that were signed in UFA time this year.
Okay.
And there's contracts there that people are simply going to regret.
Wait, are you thinking of anyone particular?
Ryan Clough?
Clough, Clarkson, I mean, you know, Horton, you know, because Wheeler's been pretty healthy injury-wise in his career.
Sure.
He doesn't have the Nathan Horton injury factor.
How much difference is the Clarkson contract in this one?
I think the age of the player is a factor. I think when you look at the age, when you're signing a guy who's 26 as opposed to a guy who's 31, I think that has a significant...
I'm just pulling up Clarkson. Clarkson's 29, so you get the three-year difference, and he signed for 5.2 a year. So less of a cap it for one more year.
Yeah, and the guy who's
the same deal, but 3 years, yeah, sure, you know. And is he more talented? I think Wheeler's a more naturally talented player. Clarkson will give you a more physical presence. And yeah. Don't get me wrong, I'm with you on that one.
I'll take talent over physical presence any day of the week, though.
I mean, Clarkson has both, but yeah, I like Wheeler as a player.
Like, I mean, I think Blake Wheeler's a better player than David Clarkson. So, I mean, the question really does boil down to what, you know, if the Jets took a chance, you know, and you know, what would Blake Wheeler get on the open market as a UFA? It's hard to believe it'd be much more than this, but if he gets that opportunity and say he finds a great deal somewhere else, how do the Jets replace him?
No, you mean you can't let him go for nothing. And but again, it's hard because you look at this deal, you look at the Wheeler deal in a vacuum and then the Little deal in a vacuum, but you have to look at them together too.
Well, I think the fact that they overpaid Brian Little, and we'll talk about Brian Little coming up next segment, the fact that they overpaid Brian Little, I have a lot more trouble with the Brian Little contract, numbers-wise, than I do the Blake Wheeler contract. To me, Brian Little is, you know, more or less just another guy. I think Blake Wheeler has a skill set that a lot of general managers would be very interested in acquiring, where Brian Little's skill set is more readily available.
Yeah, like if Little hits the market next summer, I don't think he gets in excess of the contract he got.
From the Jets?
From anybody.
Yes, I agree. You're right. I think the Jets paid Brian Little, I think they paid him too much money, and I don't know that anybody on the open market was going to give him $4.7 million on average per year. Blake Wheeler, I can see somebody, especially if he had a good year this year,
sure.
If he had come back and he had had, you know, in the 2013-14 season.
He's the guy, by the way, that's another thing right now to take into account. He's the guy now. He's not making two and a bit million.
It's not a bargain anymore. There's a lot of pressure on him now.
He's not making two and a bit million coming in from Boston's third line and going into Atlanta with no pressure. He's coming into Winnipeg now, and the first year he established himself, the second year he was really good on the first line of the Jets in a lockout shortened season. He's got to be great for 82 games now because he's getting paid as such.
That's right. You can't go, I mean, how many in that first year, how many games was it with before he scored his first goals?
Oh, 20-something?
Yeah, or I was going to say 17 or whatever. Yeah. You can't do that anymore because if that happens, the team sinks with you. The team needs, I mean, you think he's the ace, if you want to use baseball terms. He's the guy in baseball when you have an ace who comes out and puts an end to every losing streak because he's that good every 5 days. The Jets have to rely on Blake Wheeler to be that guy now.
This line's going
to
get paid in the Taves line area. This line's going to get paid like the other top lines in this Koivu line. I mean,
it's like you said, there's about $500,000 difference between what Ladd, Little, and Wheeler are making as compared to what Krejci,
Lucic
and Erickson are making in Boston. Yeah. And frankly, you know, which line would you prefer to have?
Well,
I know my answer, but the Jets, these three guys now have to step up. I mean, you know, Andrew Ladd, if he plays like he played last year again, is a bargain.
For sure.
Blake Wheeler, does he have to be a point of game player?
No, I mean, he has to basically do what he's been doing so far, Drew. I think that's kind of how they've paid him. But you know, you're not getting value. You're going to get value from Ladd, meaning you're going to get more production than probably his contract's paying him, which you just alluded to.
Right.
It's going to be hot, tough to get value from Wheeler, but that's the UFA market, is that you don't get value because it's inflated.
Sure. You get value every year before the guy hits UFA.
That's right.
And that's the question, is that can he match what he did the last 2 years? And if he does, the Jets probably say, yeah, we're okay with this. But if he takes a step back.
But the question is, I mean, how has this team changed? And that's more of a big picture thing. But how has this team changed? This team's going to be a cap team, essentially. And how has it changed from last year?
You know, that's the interesting thing to me, is you never really thought the Winnipeg Jets coming into the NHL, again, would be this close to the salary cap. And when you're this close, you really don't have any flexibility to do any other moves. And I think you have to wonder, are there any other moves coming? I mean, the obvious answer would be you have these two defensemen, Byfuglien and Enstrom, getting paid in excess of $5 million, and you're going to be giving Zach Bogosian what looks like, you know, around something else. Can you have three guys on the back end being paid that much? And I don't know if you can.
Two of which aren't good defenders.
This is the roster. Barring some trades, this is the roster for the next
and we
going
said it,
forward.
And we'll touch on this on a go-forward basis. But, I mean, they're, the prospects have to develop. It is a must more than other organizations, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't...
Well, across the board in the NHL, if your prospect, if you, that's where you're getting the bargain. That's where you're getting your value. And if your prospects don't develop,
right,
you're not getting a bargain anymore. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Brian Little's contract. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. We spoke about the Blake Wheeler contract signing. Brian Little also signed earlier this week for the Winnipeg Jets, a five-year deal worth $23.5 million, an average annual value of $4.7 million. First word that comes to mind regarding this contract, Richard Pollock.
Again, I mean, overpay for me, another overpay, Drew. I'm not as gung-ho on Little's game as I am on Wheeler's game, and I know you know we talked about the comparable cap hits, which CapGeek provides on its website, capgeek.com. And you mentioned, and you look at the comparables here, and Little probably fits in more with the group of Tuomo Ruutu, Scotty Hartnell, RJ Umberger, Sam Gagne, Marty Erat, Marchand, Lino, you know, Ryan Malone, Patchy Reddy. Some of these contracts, I think, are untradeable on this list, and like Ville Lino, Tuomo Ruutu, for example, and all that stuff. Other of them provide some good value. I think overall, though, Drew, you're paying him close to $5 million, and he's exceeded 50 points once in his career, and made this argument last week. You know, what is he providing? I know we're going to talk to Anton Thun, and Thun did a good job here on this negotiation, as far as I'm concerned.
Anton Thun is Brian Little's agent. He comes up next segment.
But, I mean, the question is, you know, for five years, you have him for a five-year deal. So, again, he's getting long-term. And, again, my question is, guys, is if you're giving him term, why are you giving him the big cap? Big cap hit per year. If you're supposed to give term, you're supposed to get a little bit of a break, and I don't think they have gotten a break here. And then, you know, he's at worst, got to be at worst your second line guy for 4.7, at worst. And I think that's what he is at best. So I'm not sure. Like, this one is a little bit more peculiar. He's not a dominant faceoff guy. He's not that good in the power play. He's fine on the penalty kill, nothing special. I mean, you know, here the responsible two-way game. Well, you better as heck play a responsible two-way game when you get under 50 points every year. I mean, that's a fact there. So for this, you have to wonder a little bit, you know, who had the bargaining position here? Because to me, Blake Wheeler, we've mentioned this on the show, Blake Wheeler had bargaining position and a lot of leverage over the Jets because of his statistics. And I do not feel as though Brian Little had that same leverage, yet essentially leveraged himself the same deal in terms of Wheeler on that scale for what their talent is.
Has Kevin Cheveldayoff played his cards? Like, is there a book on him now that agents have negotiated with him for a couple of years?
See, again, it's not enough. It's been two and a bit years. It's hard to tell.
Really? Even after what, you know, probably overpaying for these guys, you know, maybe overpaying for Grant Clitsam?
Yeah, no, Pavlik and Enstrom. I mean,
you know,
well, the problem also is, Drew, is you get to the point where Enstrom and Wheeler and Little, they're all pending UFAs the summer before he's negotiating with them. So he's kind of, it's been a difficult position for him as well because you got to kind of decide. I wrote that article on illegalcurve.com right before Enstrom signed at the trade deadline. I mean, you either trade him then or you sign him in the summer. But you got to do one or the other.
Right.
So...
But, I mean, you know, we've seen enough of his negotiations now, I think, to see that, you know, this is a guy who's...
Like, he'll pay his guys and he'll give them term. I mean, that's the thing, Drew.
And if you're an agent,
Yeah.
And if you're a player and you're saying, hey, this is a guy who, you know, could have stared us down.
In this situation, I feel like he could have. Like, he could have gone to arbitration. And you don't want to go to arbitration. You don't want to ruin the player, all that stuff.
But if he's going to go 5 years with Brian Little, you can probably say, I'll give you 5 years, but I'm not giving you more than four a year.
That's what I mean. Like, the point is, if you go, that's the point from last segment. If you go to the UFA market, is somebody giving Brian Little that deal? That's what I want to know.
I don't think so. I mean, I think somebody gives Wheeler his deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody knows. I mean, these guys, there's nobody that's unknown in the NHL. Everybody knows what these guys are.
That's right.
All the GMs know what Brian Little is, for better or worse. And, you know, he's not a guy who's going to kill you. And he's not a guy who's going to dominate against you. He's a guy who's there. He's not the focal point of your game plan.
That's right.
He's just a guy. I mean, I think it was Steve Simmons on Twitter. I believe it was Steve Simmons, Sun Media, TSN, the reporters, said, you know, what am I not seeing about this Brian Little contract? I think he used the line, isn't he just another guy?
Well, and he's not another guy, Drew, in the sense that he can play, you know, he can play your, yeah. I think he's playing first line center on this team. I think he's a second line center. I've said that basically throughout. So he's not another guy because he can do those things. I mean, he can skate the NHL level. He's got a pretty good shot, you know. But, you know, and people talked a little bit about him moving to the wing as a possibility in terms of providing a little bit more flexibility. That's fine. But, like, most centers in the NHL can move to the wing. It's nobody from the wing can move to the center. That's the
right.
point.
I mean, if you're a centerman that can't play the wing, then I don't know. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. I mean, you look at, we're going to talk about Team Canada's orientation camp.
They're not moving center. They're not moving wings to the center. They're moving centers to the wing.
Yeah, they got about 400 centers on that team that are all going to play wing positions because you can adapt to it.
Yeah.
So I mean, there is some value in that. You know, in being a centerman, but 4.7 a year for a guy who.
But again, Drew. 4.7 a year, it's the question is, you can't look at that just, you know, in a vacuum there. The question is, what is the term? And they give him 5 years. If you tell me 4.7 for 3 years, I'm like, overpay, but I'll take it. I'll be fine with it. 4.7 for 5 years, different story.
I mean, this is a guy who's at 32 points last year.
He's got a short year.
Yeah, well, 32 points in 48 games. I mean, you know, so he's, whatever that is, probably 0.6 points per game or, you know, somewhere around there in terms of average point per game. He's got 227 career points in 404 career games. He had his best year goal scoring wise. You know, with
Kovalchuk with Atlanta. I mean, I think that Anton Thun likely played the Ladd Wheeler factor. They like him. They're friends with him. They want to all play together. They want to stay in Winnipeg.
We want to keep your line. I mean,
for sure.
You know, when, you know, Anton Thun coming up in a couple minutes here on the program, you know, this fair question is, you know, he's probably said to them, who are you going to replace him with? Find me a centerman that you're going to replace him with on your team.
And I think that's the thing with all these Jets negotiations. The Jets were dealt this hand from Atlanta, which they really didn't have much say in. And look, you have Ladd, Wheeler, and Little, and all these guys that they've signed to long-term contracts. But if they choose not to sign them, what's the alternative out there? I mean, you're looking at if the Jets if they don't sign Little, what? So they go to arbitration, and you know they get him for 1 year, and then maybe lose him next year. What are you going to do? Have Mark Scheifele as your number two? Like what?
Well, the question is, next summer, what's the center market? Are you going to pay, you know, somebody to play a similar role for less term on a little bit of higher annual basis? I mean, that's the question. The other thing is, Michael, I understand your point completely. I see it. But if you're signing guys because of that, then what is the vision?
That's right. If you're signing guys, I mean, if you think your team is good enough, then you sign them. If you don't think the team is good enough, then you suck it up and you say, okay, I'm gonna lose these guys or I'm going to trade somebody because I don't think we're good enough to win the Stanley Cup yet.
I totally understand Michael's point, and it's a good one. But the question is like, are you signing him because you think he's worth that? Or are you signing him because you're worried you don't have any replacement for that? And you think that's what's going to take to keep him?
Never mind how good he actually is or how he improves your team.
And it's not an easy decision. I'm not sitting here saying it's easy. It's hard.
Well, if you don't sign him, what's out there right now? Mikhail Grabowski? Like, what's he?
I'll tell you right now that Mikhail Grabowski, I know it doesn't take out the cultural and the cultural and the dressing room and all that stuff. Mikhail Grabowski could be as good as Brian Little.
I mean, if you're Mikhail Grabowski and you see this contract by a guy who's not
exactly
a UFA, are you jumping up and down and celebrating? I mean, the guy hasn't signed yet for, I'm sure there are some teams out there.
If you plug Grabowski into between Ladd and Wheeler, I would say there'd probably be no discernible difference in terms of production. That's what I would say. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but that's what I would say.
I don't disagree with you. The question, I mean, it really boils down to, Is this team a playoff team, a good playoff team, with these guys under contract for long term?
Well, depends on the development that we talked about. What is Kane? Does Kane take the next step? Does Scheifele take another step? Those are factors. Can those guys become top line players? Because then these guys are in your second tier. You're paying them quite a bit of money, but you know you have Kane locked up for quite a bit, and Scheifele's on first year of entry level this year. So if they can take another step.
I think the big question now is what's going to happen with the number two center position. I mean, Mark Scheifele, do we have him slotted in there now? And what production is he going to provide? But really, you know, the Jets are really, really counting on him to say, hey, I'm ready to play in the NHL when he never has done that before. So, I mean, he's going to be – this is his rookie year, big, big season where the Jets are – you know, need him to perform.
And he's burning an entry-level deal – a year of his entry-level regardless. So the value that you're getting before having to pay him – is the clock is starting there.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Brian Little's agent Anton Thun is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the managing director of M5 Sports. He's Brian Little's agent, Anton Thun. Anton, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure as always, guys.
First question, I mean, we have for you regarding the contract that your client Brian Little signed with the Winnipeg Jets. You know, push comes to shove. When push came to shove in this negotiations, what was the final piece to getting this deal done with the Jets?
Well, you know what? At the end of the day, I don't know if there was a final piece that you can define it as that. We had gone through a lengthy negotiation where we were received offers on term. Brian had, from day one, indicated that if at all possible, he'd like to stay in Winnipeg and have some term on the deal. And I don't think it's betraying anybody's confidence that with Winnipeg, we had indicated, and they had indicated to us that they'd like to do a 4 or 5 year deal for Brian, and we were open to that. So we filed for arbitration simply as part of the process. Arbitration would have only awarded a 1 year deal, and quite honestly, that would have been, I believe, an unsatisfactory result for both Brian and for the club, because they, you know, both had indicated that they prefer to do something a little longer term. So at the end of the day, we agreed on the term, and I think that was done in the initial stages of the process, and really it came down to finalizing what that money would be on the term. And you know, as typical in this type of situation, there's a disagreement, and at the end of the day, the arbitration process was really used more so as a time deadline to get a deal done rather than a threat of any kind.
And Anton, you talk about, you know, term not really being a huge factor because you guys were thinking along the same lines. And that money, you know, I think it came out in terms of the briefs that were filed that you were seeking about 5.5 for your client, and for the Jets were seeking, I believe, 3.25. How did that 4.7 number come to be at the end of the day?
You know what? It really had nothing to do with either of the briefs, to be quite honest with you. It had more so to do with the exchange of information between myself and Larry Simmons, who was negotiating on behalf of the Jets. Throughout the whole process, and we were at a number, I guess, prior to that period of time that was higher than 4.7, and they were at a number that was lower than 4.7. And on the Monday prior to the Wednesday deadline for the arbitration, after the briefs had been exchanged, and really I don't think that the brief exchange had anything to do with it. It was perhaps more so Sam Gagner's contract being finalized around that time as well that had a more significant impact that gave us a little bit a better read of what the marketplace was going to be. And that being the case, you know, they came to us on that Monday morning. Larry Simmons did and proposed a new offer. I took it back to Brian. We had a discussion. We then went back to the Jets in terms of a limited no-trade proposal, which with all due respect to the Jets, was fair, and they recognized it was fair, and they agreed to it, and then the deal got done. There was nothing acrimonious at all. It was just a business-like negotiation, guys.
That's great. You know, it's good to hear. Anton, in terms of that no-trade clause, can you elaborate on what the specifics are on that?
You know what? I don't ever elaborate on contracts. The whatever information is out there publicly, is available publicly, and I don't really get into disclosing contractual terms in any discussions.
You know, Anton,
even with you guys,
we understand that. And respect that, Anton. You know, you talked about the Sam Gagner contract. Is there a benefit for a player to have an arbitration hearing maybe a little bit later on, just so some of the other players can maybe set the market?
Well, I think so. I think in this case it was helpful simply because if you look at the historical records of Sam Gagner and Brian Little, mm-hmm. They're very, very similar. Now, they're probably very different people. I know Sam a little bit, and obviously I know Brian very well. And everybody, even though statistics can be the same, contributions can be different in different circumstances, and individual personalities can be different as well. And as you can see from Sam's contract, Sam agreed to a 3-year deal rather than a 5-year deal that Brian was comfortable with. That probably is a reflection of their personalities rather than their play, to be quite honest with you, because I would think that Sam would have probably been comfortable on a 5-year deal or some other kind of deal as well. But for him and for Edmonton, it worked out at 3 years. In Brian's case, Brian was comfortable with the environment in Edmonton or in Winnipeg and the players that he's playing with, and hopefully the growth of the team with some of the other young players coming in to lock himself in for 5 years, subject to the right to the Jets that should trade him. But there are significant limitations on where they can trade him to that Brian was comfortable with agreeing to.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Anton Thun. He's Brian Little's agent. He's also the managing director of M5 Sports. Anton, in the course of your negotiations with Larry Simmons, as you mentioned, the Winnipeg Jets organization, the Jets were simultaneously conducting a negotiation with Blake Wheeler and, we presume, Zach Bogosian. Did the Jets sort of say, we're looking to sign those guys long-term as well? Did that factor into your negotiations with the Jets?
No, you know what? My understanding is that's what they would like to do with both players as well. It only makes sense. But it really didn't, because we can't control what Blake Wheeler and Zach Bogosian choose to do. Each of them has their own rights, and Blake, as was the case with Brian, has the right to be an unrestricted free agent 1 year from now and may, in fact, decide to avail himself of that opportunity and move on. Now, he may decide to do a long-term deal with Winnipeg as well, but we really can't make that decision for Brian based on the if-come on other players.
Anton, Brian Little's a flexible player in that he can play wing if need be and has the speed and a pretty good shot. Did the Jets at all talk to you about the possibility of moving him there long-term, or they just strictly talked about him being the center on a go-forward basis?
No, the change of position never came into play. Larry and I have had conversations, as have Chevy and I, on different scenarios in Winnipeg and slash Atlanta in the past many times. And quite honestly, in terms of goal scoring, Brian Little's strongest season was his second year in pro when he did play the wing with Todd White in Atlanta, and Slava Kozlov was a left winger. And so he's capable of doing that, but I think right now, for the needs that the Winnipeg Jets have, I don't think I'm saying this out of context. They have needs down the middle that they probably could add to strength down the middle, rather than taking away. And if they move Brian to the wing, centermen are quality centermen are a highly sought after commodity and very difficult to find in the NHL these days. And moving a very competent centerman that has defensive skills and offensive skills and sort of blends into whatever role you really ask him to perform on the ice, those guys are difficult to find. And I think that's what Brian Little is.
Anton, we'll let you go on this last question. I mean, we've talked a lot on the show, you know, just in general, talking about how the arbitration process can be quite contentious between two sides, and feelings have a tendency or can easily get hurt in the process. Sort of a two-part question. Have you ever been to arbitration with a client before? And if so, how do you prepare your client for that contentious process?
Well, yes, I've been to arbitration before many times. I've been in this industry for 30 years, so it ends up being a process that sometimes you have no choice but to take the club to arbitration. And listen, guys, I think the important thing that players need to understand, and we try to educate our clients, that arbitration is simply a process. Mm-hmm. It's part of the negotiation. You can use that as a tool in effort to set a target deadline as to when a deal needs to be struck, and hopefully that deal can be struck between the player and the club reasonably before the arbitration takes place. Sometimes that doesn't happen, and as a result of that, you do go to arbitration. I think both sides need to recognize that they need to be as professional and businesslike in arbitration as possible, because it could be a damaging process. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't need to be. The only time it ends up being a damaging process is when one or both parties decide that they want to use the process to hurt the other side. And I don't think that's a good decision in any case, because it just creates acrimony that is not necessary in the process. Arbitration is not designed to hurt anybody's feelings. It's designed to be a business-like process. And once it gets beyond that, then it can become detrimental.
Anton Thun, he's Brian Little's agent. He's also the managing director of M5 Sports. Thank you very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure, guys.
Take care. Thanks very much, Anton. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Brian Little's agent, Anton Thun, managing director of M5 Sports, for having just joined us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on illegalcurve.com and on tsn1290.ca. Hopefully it'll be up early in a little bit, later this afternoon, rather.
What was that, Drew?
Sorry, I
what?
Stumbled over my words there a little
bit.
I
don't know what that meant at all.
Okay, anyways, you know what I meant.
Once it's done, it'll be
most up. Important news out of that, obviously.
Remus, once it's done, it'll be up. That's good.
I'll stay behind you.
I hope it'll be done when it wasn't.
Most important news there, Anton Thun confirming, or really informing, because I don't think I'd seen this anywhere else, that Brian Little has a limited no-trade clause in his new contract that he signed with the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. So certainly something to keep in mind. Obviously what that'll mean, without knowing the exact details, is that he will have to submit a list of teams every year.
Depends. I mean, it could be certain teams he won't go to, or he has to submit a team. I don't know.
It'll either be 10 teams he refuses to go to, or 20 teams that he'll accept a trade to. Something along those lines. Regardless, interesting news there that Brian Little has a limited no-trade clause in his new deal with the Winnipeg Jets.
Wait, does that mean that Blake Wheeler has one as well? I mean, you think that if they're giving Brian Little one and he's signing for, 5 years at 4.7, if you're signing a guy for longer term and more money, that would also be on the table as well.
Yeah, Mike, I think you're exactly right. Who's Mike? Remus, you're exactly right. I think that's a good point, because, again, Little's contract kind of serves as a framework for Wheeler's as far as we can tell. And if Little got one, we'd have to assume Wheeler got one. Good point.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly might come up in the upcoming press conference call with Blake Wheeler. That's will be in about 10 minutes' time here on TSN 1290. We'll carry that live for you at the top of the hour. So the Winnipeg Jets, Chevy's almost done with his off-season work. He's got one more to go. That's Zach Bogosian. We expect that to get done before Friday, because that's when his arbitration hearing is.
Based on what we can tell, it's Tuesday night, Wednesday it'll get done.
Yeah, just, they've been a couple days beforehand. I mean, briefs will be exchanged.
Wheeler's were in exchange, I believe. I don't think there's a weekend hiatus, so I believe it would have been this morning that it would have been submitted.
Well, in the initial show plan that I put together yesterday was I was expecting the numbers for the, when they exchange briefs, I was expecting the numbers to leak. Obviously, they got that done last night, so those numbers are never going to be made public because, well, they don't have to be. So it'll be interesting.
They didn't exchange them.
Right, they didn't exchange them, so exactly right. They obviously had them probably in their back pocket, but it never got to that. They got the deal done instead. So it'll be an interesting time next week. One more to go, and then really the summer break, I think, for Kevin Cheveldayoff will take effect.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the season starts October 1, like the regular season. So, yeah, I mean, so it's not a short, it's not a long summer.
No, it'll be, you know.
If you're, you know, it's been since April, so maybe it is, but.
Couple weeks in August off, and then back at it for the grind. But, you know, this is the Jets roster. They signed Peluso to a two-year deal earlier this week.
Yep. So the minimum's $550. For a contract.
That's right.
In NHL this year, and it's actually the minimum next year as well. Mm-hmm. And so they signed him to $565.
No, $562.
Sorry.
Five.
Sorry.
So it was a 2-year contract for Anthony Peluso. 2 years, $1.125 is the total. So an average annual value of $562,500.
Right. So it's $12,500 over the NHL minimum for the next 2 years.
Right.
It's a one-way deal, so people might be surprised because he's never played in the NHL before. The Jets claimed him off waivers and put him in the roster.
He's got 5 career NHL games.
You know, having said that, I mean, you have a minimum guy. If you have to put him on waivers, maybe he gets claimed, maybe he doesn't. And you're paying, you know, you have a cap hit of a minimum salary against the books. I mean, I guess next year it might have a little bit of an effect because they're actually going to be close to a cap team. But generally speaking, it's not an issue. And it's one of those things where, you know, Mark Chipman and David Thompson have enough money that it shouldn't really be a concern for this team.
That's right. I mean, they're giving a guy the extra year so that they can get him. I mean, that's a time where they're using term to keep a salary lower.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And what they're doing, Drew, here also is they're, you know, I mean, they're bringing on a fighter. So the first year they didn't really have one. And last year, obviously, they brought in Peluso, but that's just an interesting strategic thing in terms of, you know, where the game is going.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets obviously think that a fighter on the team is necessary.
Do you expect that he and Thorburn will sort of swap in and out of the lineup depending on the opponent?
Probably more Peluso than Thorburn, I think, this year. I think Thorburn's going to be your 13-14 guy this year.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the Jets...
I don't think he's going to get a regular spot in this roster.
If they gave him 2 years and they gave him a one...
There's no room for him. I mean, Halaschuk's not a two-way deal, but he's better than Thorburn, with all due respect. Yeah,
everybody
Thorburn.
Sort of forget about Matt Halaschuk and the role he's going to play there. I mean, a little bit. You know, the signing happened, but it was sort of under the radar, and you don't really, you know... Personally, I don't know about anybody else, but personally, I just haven't wrapped my brain around that he's going to be one of the regulars as well, as you would expect that he probably would be.
But maybe they rotate him and Peluso out based on the matchup.
Yeah.
Like against Detroit, you're not playing Peluso, but maybe against St. Louis, you are.
Depending on the team, a more rough and tumble team or whatever. You know, do you buy this? You know, do you see a lot in Anthony Peluso's game, or do you see anything in
him? He's a fighter. I mean, he fights. He drops the gloves. He fights. He doesn't do anything.
So you don't see anything more than. You don't see anything.
I don't think he's ever scored more than 10 goals at any level. I mean, I see a fighter. I see a guy who's big and drops the gloves. You know, that's all I see.
So you don't. Okay. Which is fair. But I mean, I think I read somewhere online, I think it was one of the I don't know if it was a Free Press guy or that said that the Jets see him in a Sean Thornton potential role.
I see a possible girlfriend in a Cindy Crawford role, but that doesn't always happen, right? So
fair enough. What about Eric O'Dell? He signs with the Jets. It was a one year, two-way deal, $600,000 at the NHL level.
I mean, an awesome year, and he's on off entry level. He had no leverage. The Jets didn't call him up last year, and God knows they could have used something. Especially up the middle. So, I mean, we'll see. If he does have another good year in the AHL, maybe he gets a crack. Maybe they make him compete against Scheifele. They kind of create a battle in camp. It's always good to have battles. There's no centers, really, on this. I mean, there's 4 centers on this roster.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's not, as Anton Thun just alluded to, with all due respect, it's not a deep position on the Jets. So, of course, they like to create, you know, some kind of a battle ground. I believe Odell's a center.
Yeah, he is. Okay. He played center for...
I've never seen him play, so I don't know anything about his game. But he produced at the AHL level on a team that was pretty damn bad, so...
So
St. John's was awful last year.
Oh, I know St. John's was awful. Yeah, that's why, I mean, you can say that, you know, it was sort of like when Scheifele produced in his first year in Barrie, he got a lot of points on a terrible team.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Odell's always scored in this over his career. You know, I mean, a point a game last year in the AHL, always a point a game in the OHL. So probably been worse players. I mean, maybe he'll get a shot in camp. There's too many guys, though, on one-way deals. That's the one problem. Right? Like, think about it. You know, you have your little Wheeler line. Say Scheifele starts off on the team, even though he's on a on a one. He's on an entry level, so they can send him down. Shifley, Kane, and Setoguchi, Frolik, Jokinen, and James Wright, and Tangrati, and then James Wright, Slater, Peluso, Thorburn, Halaschuk.
Well, Halaschuk's on a two-way deal.
Right, but, you know, and you can send Shifley down, but then you have Odell, you know, so it's not like you have a ton of roster flexibility there, really.
There's just a lot of guys.
Yeah.
But like you said, you know, if the worst-case scenario of having that many guys is it creates competition, that's not a bad thing because this, I mean, I'll give the Jets credit in that they've certainly improved their depth over in the last couple of years since they came over from Atlanta. You know, there do seem to be more NHL bodies on the roster than there have been in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Especially when this year you're essentially replacing Kyle Wellwood and Antti Mäntynen with Devin Setoguchi and Michael Frolik, which is, I think, definitely an improvement, you know, maybe two times improvement. You'd like to think those guys would be able to give you some of that secondary scoring that the Jets really haven't had in the first 2 years. I mean, they're such a top-heavy team, and you'd like to think Setoguchi can, you know, can get a few goals, and Frolik will help you on the penalty kill, which hasn't been that great. I mean, both their special teams really haven't been that great the last few years.
Is this team, I mean, this is the roster. Mm-hmm. And this is the roster, you know, with the exception of next year when, you know, Setoguchi and Jokinen are both UFAs. This could be the roster for the next 2-3 years.
That depends. I mean, it always depends on what happens with Trouba and who becomes expendable and can they trade Bufflin, which I think they'd like to do if they could get value for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are always moving parts, Drew. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, you're signing all these guys as a core. What happens with Kane? So everything can always change. But you have a lot of guys on long-term deals now. And after Bogosian, you're going to likely have, you know, Enstrom, Bogosian, Little Lad, Wheeler, or Lad less so, Kane. You have long-term deals. So, yeah, it is your core.
Is it good enough?
Well, again, I mean, you're competing in a serious division here. You know, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, like, they're not 35 here. You know, St. Louis, have a lot of young talent. Really good on the back end, too. Good coaching and such. And Minnesota's on the way up, aren't they? So it's a tough division. I mean, Nashville, I mean, you know, Seth Jones and Shea Weber on the back end for a long time. And Colorado, I mean, McKinnon up the middle, McKinnon, Deshane, Stasny. Whew, all three of those guys are pretty high-end skill guys. You know, we haven't even talked about, who am I forgetting in the division right now? Nashville? I talked about Nashville. I talked about St.
Dallas.
Louis. Dallas. There you go. Sagan, you know, Jamie Benn. So, I mean, it ain't easy. It ain't easy.
Yeah, it ain't easy. It's a good way of putting it. I mean, it's not. They never thought it was going to be easy, but you have to.
It's harder this year, Drew. You know, you talk about this Lad, Little, Wheeler line too. I mean, it's fine. They've produced points wise for sure, and then you talk about this. You know, they played against a top competition. True, but I'll tell you what: Florida, Tampa, Carolina, Washington aren't exactly throwing out the top end defenses in the National Hockey League. Like who? Let me ask you: out of all those teams, is Shea Weber's better than all the players on all those teams? You know, you're talking about Pietrangelo. Shattenkirk's better than probably the top-end guys on all those teams. He's playing second pairing in St. Louis.
Ryan Suter's better than all those guys.
You know, Seabrook and Keith are playing a part for most of the year in Chicago. They're better than most of those guys. So it's not as easy. So it's going to be a big year for those guys to prove they can do it against the top competition in this division because it's a heck of a lot easier than playing against, you know, with all due respect, Jamie McBain. And, like, the Carolina, the guys that they were throwing out there for a while, seriously, Florida's top-end guys. I mean, Brian Campbell, great offensively, but he's not a great defender. Who was a top-end defender on Florida last year?
Eric Goodbrandsen.
That's what I'm saying. He's a developing young guy. What about Tampa? I mean, they're just still, Hedman's still trying to find his identity. Brewer's not what he once was. I mean, these are the top-end guys they were playing in. So when you quote the competition, that's fine, but take it in context.
Feel better?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. Why don't we go to break? When we come back, we're going to get into the Blake Wheeler press conference call that's going to take place. You'll hear it live here on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org. The CGA Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers. Waiting for the Blake Wheeler conference call. It'll get started here momentarily. We'll bring it to you live here on TSN 1290. Again, Blake Wheeler, in case you missed it, signed a six-year contract with the Winnipeg Jets late last night. 6 years, $33 million, an average annual value of $5.6 million. Blake Wheeler will be the Winnipeg Jets' first-line right winger. Let's go to that conference call. Blake, Drew Mindell, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290. Can you take us through your decision to sign a long-term deal with the Jets in the face of sort of becoming a UFA at the end of this coming season?
Yeah, it was, I mean, for me, it was virtually a no-brainer. You know, I sat down with my agent, Matt Kidder, this spring. He came out in April or May, whatever, I can't remember which one, and we had that discussion. You know, he said, what do you want to do? I have no problem being the guy to get you to UFA if that's where your heart is, if you don't want to be where you are, yada, yada, yada. So for me, it was no brainer. We sat there, I looked in the eyes, I said, this is where I want to be. You know, I believe in what, you know, people like Mark Chipman and Chevy, what everyone stands for, and especially my teammates. You know, I think I have believed, you know, since I got here, I've been, you know, I've told you guys that probably a million times, that I believe that we have what it takes to get to the next level. So this is just a part of that process. I really truly believe that great things are in store for this group.
Blake, Ken Weeb from the Winnipeg Sun here. How did free agency compare this time to last time, given the possibility of arbitration component being part of this?
Well, I've been in that situation a couple times already, Ken. You know, coming out of college like I did, I've had arbitration rights, you know, since I've been in the league. So I went to arbitration once with Boston when I signed my last contract with Winnipeg. It was kind of the same process. So arbitration has kind of been a bit of the norm for me since I've been a pro. And having been through the process, it's not the best case scenario. You know, it's never fun to have to sit across the table from you know, the people that are in charge and you know, hear some things that, while it's all a business, you know, you still don't like to hear those things, you know, all the time. So I'm thrilled to have avoided that process. I don't think it's really the end goal for anyone. You know, it's a huge right for the players in our CBA, and it's an important a right that we've retained in the CBA. But at the end of the day, I think this is the preferred method to get a deal done before you have to go to Toronto.
For sure. One other one, you know, when some guys get a hefty raise, they sometimes put a little more pressure on themselves to take their game to the next level. How does a guy like yourself avoid that and just continue the progression naturally?
I think I'm the opposite. I think I put more pressure on myself, you know, like in the last couple of years. You know, I've put a lot of pressure on myself, you know, because coming from Boston and being, you know, more of a third, kind of fourth line, bottom six forward player, you know, I'd always thought that I had more to give, and you know, I was given that opportunity in Winnipeg. So I think, you know, I think kind of my struggles in the beginning of Winnipeg were a bit of a reflection of pressing too much and trying too hard, putting too much pressure on myself. So now having that vote of confidence from a franchise, you know, I'm the kind of person that kind of takes that and runs with it. You know, having faith put in me, it just kind of gives me life and energy to go out there and you know, hopefully reach new heights, because I think there's more in store for sure.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Blake, it's Tal Tim Campbell from NHL.com. Wondering if in the last the week or two you could sort of describe the process. Was it acrimonious? Was it nasty? Was it friendly? Can you give us some inside look at what this was like for the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think the reason why we are where we are right now is because I think both sides wanted to get a deal done. So I think because of that, I think the nature of the talks were always cordial, and you know, I don't think there was ever any fire spitting back and forth. I think both sides wanted to get a deal done. So I think what it came down to was finding, you know, the right numbers that worked for both sides. I think at the end of the day, both sides had to, you know, had to come together and go, you know, go to a different spot to make a deal. And that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. You know, you have the things that you're preaching back and forth to each other and the things that you believe are, you know, for me as a player, you know, where we had me being as a player and for them as an organization, where they had me as a player. And I think those really lined up. So I think that's why we were able to make a deal, is because at the end of the day, we saw me in the same light.
So a tangent question then. You've done two contracts with the Jets and Kevin Cheveldayoff now. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Nope, that's right.
And so what is Kevin Cheveldayoff like as you know, the negotiator on the other side of the table? Is he a hard-nosed, you know, nasty guy? Is he easy to deal with? Tell us a bit about that, if you can.
Well, I didn't really, you know, sit in personally on many of the discussions, so I can't speak to exactly what his nature was, you know, when they were negotiating. Everything that I heard from my agent was, like I said, you know, everything was very cordial. I think at the end of the day, the feeling that I got was that Chevy and Chipper and everyone, you know, really wanted me to be a Jet long term. And like I said before, I really wanted to be a Jet long term too. So, you know, speaking from my experience with Chevy, it's always been, you know, very, very even headed and very, you know, very cordial. I think that, you know, we wanted to get a deal done. So, you know, if maybe they didn't want me to be a Jet long term, maybe he'd be a little more nasty. But I guess I can only really speak for my experience.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Hey Blake, it's Tal Pinchevsky from NHL.com. You've led the team in scoring since they moved to Winnipeg. Is there anything in particular for you that coming to Winnipeg maybe helped you in terms of finding your game and your role on this team?
Well, I think just the opportunity I was given. You know, I think you know, I came in there day one and was put on you know, the top line with Litz and Laddie, and you know, I think that was a huge vote of confidence right off the bat, and that added ice time, that added responsibility was something that I had really wanted, and so it just really gave me you know, a shot of life, and it was something that I definitely needed in my career. And from there, you know, it was just I was able to gain a lot of confidence from that, and I think that's meant all the world, is playing with two great players, and we really complement each other well. So I think that's helped me take my game to the next level, and also just, you know, that added responsibility, that added ice time, gave me a lot of confidence in that, and you can't downplay, you know, how much confidence can help a hockey player.
Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Blake, you got some good news earlier this week. Can you talk about what it would mean to you to represent the United States in Sochi at the Olympics?
Well, it'd be a huge honor. You know, I'm honored already to be, you know, mentioned in this group and to you know, put myself in the mix to hopefully make that team. You know, obviously, you know, you guys are in Canada, so you kind of have the same problem we have as Americans. There's a wealth of talent and a wealth of great hockey players. So at the end of the day, it's going to be, you know, whatever you know, the people in charge deem to be the best guys to go over there and win a gold medal. But you know, I think that it's an opportunity that, you know, I think I can really help play on that big ice and utilize some of my attributes over there.
What do you remember about watching the game? Did you watch the game in 2010?
I sure did. Yeah, it was. I mean, some of the most exciting hockey I think any of us can probably remember watching, especially that gold medal game. You know, a few of my teammates in Boston had played over there, and they just said that it was an experience like no other, something that they'll never forget. And the hockey was just second to none. So to have that opportunity to go play over there would be a huge thrill.
One last one. What are your thoughts on the off-season additions of Devin Setoguchi and Michael Frolik?
Well, I think I think they're great additions. You know, I think you have two guys that A, have proven that they can provide offense, and Frölich just won a Stanley Cup, and you can never discount adding a Stanley Cup champion to your team. That is an instant boost right away, and I think they're two guys that are hungry to maybe get a little bit added minutes and responsibility with us, and I'm really excited about what they bring to the table because I think they can really help take our team to that next level.
Thanks again.
Hi again, Blake. Drew Mandel from TSN 1290, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In the course of your negotiations, how much conversation have you had with Zach Bogosian and Brian Little as, all three of you were, negotiating new contracts with the Jets?
Yeah, we kept in touch, for sure. I've kept in touch with a lot of my teammates. They're curious as to what was going on and where things sat. So, I definitely talked to Bogo and talked to Litz we were all kind of in the same boat, wanting to make Winnipeg a long term home, and now that Litz and I have accomplished that, hopefully Bogo is soon to follow.
Blake Wheeler, the Winnipeg Jets conference call upon signing his 6-year, $33 million contract with the Jets, $5.6 million a year average annual value. Pretty much said what you'd expect him to say. Guy makes that kind of commitment to the Jets. Jets have to hope that he performs at the similar level to how he's performed the last couple of years.
I hope he'd be in a good mood after getting 33.
I'd be in a good mood after getting just 3.3, never mind 33. Yeah. So Blake Wheeler, he's a long-term member of the Jets, and like you said, a lot of the Jets' hopes and dreams are on his back, and he said he embraces that pressure, so we'll see if he can perform when the games get started there, October 1st, the first game in Edmonton this year. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
TSN 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. I'm reliably informed that the renovations at Rumors are coming along swimmingly, and they are expected to be back open in and around the second week of August, just in time for Steve-O of Jackass fame to make his appearance at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Some tickets are still available, not many, but some are available for Steve-O. Go online at rumorscomedyclub.com and get yourself some tickets to see Steve-O at Rumors coming up in August. Team Canada, the orientation camp was announced earlier this week. Before we get into the actual roster, my first question for you guys is, are you surprised that Evander Kane is not on this roster?
No.
No?
No.
You're not?
No.
Tell me why.
Drew, there's too many centers on this team that can play the wing. Kane's game is too one-dimensional, and you can always play your way onto the team if you have a dynamic first half of the year, but he's a guy who needs to earn it still. And I know he's paid his dues. He's played for World Juniors, played for World Championships. Still young, and, he has to play his way onto the team and have an incredible first half. So I have no issue at all with him not being on the roster.
That's why I was surprised that he wasn't on the orientation camp roster, because Team Canada is usually pretty good at rewarding the guys who have represented Canada in international play. And he's done so, not this past year because he was injured.
So have all these guys.
I know all these guys have, but I thought that they would be, I thought that he'd be on there. I don't think that he'd necessarily make the team, but I thought he'd be on there for the orientation camp because of the sort of taking care of their boys idea.
I think we saw that USA basically invited pretty much anyone that they had in the system. But I think Team Canada is too deep to have a guy like Kane. And I said this on the warm-up this week, that I think if Kane's going to be on this roster, it's going to be in a scoring role. And I don't know if they necessarily want him to be in that checking role with their Olympic team.
Good point, Michael. If it's a guy, if he's going to play fourth line left wing, it's going to be him or Brad Marchand, who's also a good skater, doesn't have the same scoring ability as Evander Kane, obviously, but is a really good penalty killer and adds different element and has good chemistry with Patrice Bergeron. So, it's a numbers game in that respect as well.
And that's the thing about when they invited Andrew Ladd. Andrew Ladd, I mean, he's a top-line player at the Jets, but he's played the fourth-line role for two Stanley Cup teams, third, fourth-line, and he would definitely be able to just slide in into that role, I think, with this team.
It's an interesting point there, Michael, because he has played that role. He's become more of a first, second-line guy, first-line guy last year with his production, but also when you come to be a first-line guy, it kind of changes your style a bit, right? You're looking to score more, you're a little bit less physical, a little bit, you're not as gritty. And I'm not saying that in a negative way at all, just that, you know, when you're expected to score, your game changes. So it'd be interesting to see if he were to make the team, if he fits into, you know, that's the role he's going to have to fit into, but if he succeeds at it as he did before.
And a lot of this, you know, a lot of, we are going through the team and making our picks. A lot of it, I think, is definitely determined by what happens in the first half of
that's
the
right.
season, because I think what happened in 06 was they had all these guys like a Staal and a Crosby who were having such great seasons, but they basically went with the same guys that they had gone with in 2002 and didn't go with the hot end. We saw how they were burned on the big ice there. I think a lot of it is, hey, how are you playing at this point in time, and what can you bring to the table then, rather than going by past performance?
Right, and you know, if you look at the roster as they have it right now, I mean, some of these guys are going to have to play their way onto the squad, but it is tough to make the forward group of Team Canada. The defense is wide open, so is the goaltending as far as I'm concerned. The defense on the left side is wide open, the right side, not so much. But the forward group, I mean, it is tough. Like guys like Mike Richards, he's probably going to make the squad, but it's not a guarantee if he has just an awful first half. And he can do all the little things as well. It helps him. Ryan Getzlaff, no guarantee for him. I mean, this is not, you know, guys, like, we're talking about big-time guys here. There's certainly no guarantees to make the squad.
Yeah, I really couldn't agree more. I mean, all three of us could put in our own forwards or forward group, and they could all be different. I think, I agree, defense, it's a toss-up. Goaltending, I mean, I think Luongo has the number one, but the other two, I think, are up for debate.
Well, let's talk about the goaltenders.
Okay.
I mean, Crawford, Holtby, Luongo, Price, and Smith. You surprised that Cam Ward's not on that list?
Mm-hmm. I am surprised. I know he's coming off of injury here, and I still think he can make his way into that conversation for sure. I mean, because Cam Ward's pretty consistent, Drew. He has won a cup, and you know, those are factors, I think. I think Carey Price and Luongo are the most talented of the bunch. Hope he can get really hot. Smith just played for them in the World Championships, but I don't think he has enough of a track record to be that guy. I mean, I know he can play the puck, and that's an interesting point, is that there's no restriction in terms of playing the puck in the Olympics, but, I mean, he's not going to make it solely on that basis. So I actually think Carey Price and Luongo are the two favorites right now.
How confident are you in the Team Canada goaltending?
Not as confident as I've been in the past.
Obviously. I mean, yeah. That's...
It's not Brodeur, Joseph, and Belfour here. I mean, it's not.
I think especially if you look at the other team's goaltending, I mean, USA is absolutely stacked when you have Craig Anderson, John Quick, and Ryan Miller. Sweden has Henrik Lundqvist. I mean, Russia has... Who are they? They're not rocking Brizgalov.
No, Bobrovsky.
Bobrovsky, and then Finland has Pekarinne.
Yeah.
It's Pekarinne.
I mean, Canada's probably got the... I mean, obviously, these guys, if they're in a zone.
Yeah, I mean, Carey Price, like, skill-wise, is as good as all those guys.
Right.
100%.
But in terms of NHL, performance in the last couple of years, Canada's probably fifth, sixth in goaltending.
I mean, they're behind Rene, they're behind Lundqvist, behind Quick, for sure.
They're behind Bobrovsky based on last year.
Well, you say Canada's lower. I mean, they do have Corey Crawford, who's currently, you know, starting goaltender for the Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, if you want a guy who's just going to be there and be able to stand behind, you know, elite players, he's done that before.
He's playing against elite players. That's the difference.
Well, he's gone through, you know, the pressure. He's fresh off a Stanley Cup win.
They've showed a consistency, Team Canada, in that the guy who won them a gold last time gets the first crack at it, and that's Luongo. He won it for him in 2010, you know, for better or worse, he was the goaltender in net when they won. I expect Luongo will get the first crack at this, barring a complete meltdown of a first half of a season. I expect Luongo's the first guy up, and then after that, it could very well be, I would think Price would be second man up.
Depending on how he plays. It's right. I mean, the first half is going to be... The first half for goaltending is more important than the first half for forwards and defensemen, I think.
Well, you look at the forwards. I mean, you know, is Evander Kane sort of the number one forward that you could see maybe playing his way onto this team?
Now there's Jamie Benn. It's better than him, I think.
Benn was another omission.
Yeah. I mean, to make this team not be on the list, it's happened. Bergeron and Iginla, I believe, are the two guys who people point to all the time. But it's going to be tough.
Jamie Benn, I mean, we had when we had
Jim Nill
on. They said they because Jamie Benn played on the wing last year and he wasn't very good.
He played center. He's a natural winger. Played center.
Right.
He's back to the wing now.
Sorry, that's what I meant. That's what I meant to say there. So how much the fact that he's a winger plays into the factor that he didn't make the team initially. He's not one of those centermen who can move to the wing. He's a one dimensional isn't the right term, but
No. He's not going to be center, especially on this team. He's not going to be a center for Dallas this year. But if him and Tyler Seguin, with their skill level, end up creating a chemistry between each other, those guys could be top 10 in scoring this year.
Right.
So, I mean, who knows?
So is he's the guy that you would point at as a guy who can play his way onto the team?
Sure, absolutely. And you keep talking about, you know, you mentioned Kane, Drew, but based on the contracts the Jets have given out, Kane's playing second line next year, and we don't know whose center's going to be just yet. And if it's Ole Jokinen, he's not going to, it's going to be tough to have a great year. So
he's got, I mean, it's going to be take a very good first half.
Mm-hmm. And will he have the opportunity? I mean, you're playing second line power play, you're playing second line minutes.
We're assuming.
He still played a lot of minutes last year, but, you know, what are the minutes and
sure.
Who are they with?
If you're not getting the spotlight in the top minutes, it's hard to, and you're not playing with the best line mates, it's hard to perform in the face of that.
We haven't even talked about some of the top end guys, but we're talking about guys you'd be competing with, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, and Taylor Hall. I mean, it's not easy sledding there.
Looking at the defense.
Chris Kunitz.
You know, this defense is, you know, how would you describe this defense?
Top heavy, I'd say.
Like the
top heavy. I mean, because you have Shea Weber and you have Pietrangelo, you have Duncan, Keith, and Doughty. I think those are your four shoe-ins. I really do. And I think the next two spots, especially those are two left-side spots and then the seventh defenseman. I think actually it's bigger. You can carry eight. I think their roster is 25 or 26.
I think they expanded it this year. That sounds right.
But even so, I mean, who's playing your top minutes? So, you know, Dan Boyle, guys like Bomeister and Alsner, and you see their name on Dan Hamhuis, you see their name on the list. Mark Mathot, get you those guys, Mark Stahl, Vlasic, those guys have a legitimate shot because they can play the left side naturally. Now, I believe last Olympics, they played Boyle and Weber together, two right side guys together. And then they had Keith and Doughty and Pronger Niedermeyer. Those were the six players, and then Seabrook was the seven by the end of the tournament. Well, I mean, maybe you're okay with Weber and Boyle playing as two right side guys together, but can you have two pairings of that against top end talent from the other countries? It's tough,
especially on the bigger
ice
surface.
Exactly.
I mean, how important is the big ice surface? Is this a skating tournament?
More so than it would be in more so than it was in Vancouver for sure.
Like skating, really? Sure. I mean, if you were an average skater,
you got to be immensely skilled.
You have to, because there's a lot of room out there.
Yeah.
And if you're getting left behind, I mean, it's just something that you're not going to be able to catch up on. Just the size and your angles are so important on this tournament.
That's why playing defense in a different side that you're used to, and we've talked about this on the show before, different side on big ice, that is a tough adjustment. And you're not adjusting to it against a third line checker on the other team in an NHL game. You're adjusting to it against Sedin and, you know, Erickson or something like that.
Yeah, top flight, the best of the best in the NHL.
That's right.
You know, is this another year like, say, 06 with the Team Canada roster? I mean, up front, it seems like the forwards are as good as they've ever been.
Yeah, they're great. I don't think it's an 06 year. I think it's a transition year for defensemen and goaltending kind of, but maybe Canada in general because there's not a lot of goalies really being developed right now. But I don't think it's like 06 in that they learned from 06 and haven't rested on their laurels and have taken kind of a new younger group who can skate. So I think they've learned from that. But playing overseas, different time zone, against Russia and teams like that, in, you know, closer to their home base with not as much of a home ice. You don't have a home ice advantage. Regardless of, you know, last change, the fans in Vancouver were incredible. So you don't have that advantage.
Yeah, I think it is actually quite a lot like 06. I mean, you're coming off a gold medal win that was in North America, and now you're going over to Europe, and you're playing on a different ice surface. And I think there's so much pressure that comes with a repeat. I mean, any year, any decision you make is going to be so scrutinized and so thought over. But I mean, just the pressure and having to say, hey, having to bring all these top players together, and you are bringing in some guys who, you know, weren't on the last team, but you do want to, you know, recreate that magic that you had.
Last question. Knowing that it's very unlikely these guys are even going to hit the ice at this orientation camp, what's the use of it?
I think logistics, probably talking some about that, talking about how they're going to schedule that 2-week period, expectations, systems, things like that. A lot, you know, Drew, these guys are used to now with the crazy travel schedules they have to doing a lot of off-ice stuff and a lot of off-ice analysis of video and structure. And you have to, if you have to learn a system really quickly, I think it's overstated, I think, sometimes, because in reality they're playing very similar systems, all these teams, aside from a couple of variations. But even so, to be able to know what it is beforehand gives you a little bit more of a comfort level, have an idea of where you might play. There's a lot of factors here, you know. So I think that bigger ice, maybe they just talk to them about, you know, what they feel, how comfortable. There's a lot of things that they can get out of this.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus south of the border to the Team USA orientation camp, which is Winnipeg Jets heavy. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Michael Remus and Richard Pollock. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Ezzie Ginsberg's on holiday, which is very much like when Kramer goes away to fantasy camp. We're not 100% sure where Ezzie is, but I'm sure he's... It was his birthday earlier this week, so of course, extend our heartfelt birthday greetings to our good buddy Ezzie. I'm sure he's up listening, right, guys?
No chance.
No chance. No, yeah, I know, exactly. He'll catch the replay. That's what he'll do.
And they'll think it's live.
Yeah, and he's like, why aren't I there?
I start tweeting.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, Team USA also came out with their orientation camp roster. And it's heavy on the Winnipeg Jets. Dustin Byfuglien, Zach Bogosian, Blake Wheeler, Jacob Trouba. Four Winnipeg Jets on the Team USA orientation camp roster. How surprised are you that Byfuglien and Trouba are there?
Not really that surprised, Drew. I mean, Bufflin's got the potential to be a really dominant defenseman if he's in shape. Trouba, obviously, they just want to bring all these young guys to Gibson and such to develop them, right? So they're just bringing them there for the experience. I think that's actually a good idea as well. So, I mean, maybe I was surprised that they brought Trouba, but then in the context of who else they brought, DeKeyser and such, I'm not really that surprised.
Right, I would agree. I think when you, at first, maybe, yeah, you were a bit surprised when you say, oh, they're just basically bringing him. I mean, Seth Jones and all of these young guys are in there. So basically what Richard just said.
What's the strength of Team USA? Obviously, it's goaltending.
They're goaltending their D, for sure. I mean, you look at their top D. You're looking at Ryan Suter, Ryan McDonough, Kevin Shattenkirk. Your top four is great. I don't see any huge weaknesses there. You got Bogosian, Carlson. You got lots of guys there who can play.
Do they have enough offense up front?
Well, I mean, it's a similar story to what they had in Vancouver. I mean, they have enough guys that are really good offensive players, but not unbelievably offensively gifted.
Like,
I mean,
you look
top at top-end skill, you're talking about guys like Parise and Patrick Kane. But that's what the issue was in Vancouver, and they made it work based on how they played. But, you know, you're not talking about there's no Crosbys on the squad.
There's a pretty big – I mean, Patrick Kane's their best forward.
Offensively skilled forward, yeah.
And there's a pretty good drop-off, though, after that. You know, Kane and Parise, like they have a pretty good first line. But, if you're going down the list, they got a lot of sort of NHL role players as opposed to NHL all-stars.
Or, like, really, not role players, but really good players, but aren't that as offensively gifted. They don't have Stamkos and Crosby, you know, and Giroux, and they don't have that.
Yeah, but because you look at the guys they invited to their orientation camp in terms of the forwards, and there's nobody really there that frightens me.
No, they're going to beat you by playing a really good defensive game, being physical, blocking shots, and getting clutch goals. Like, they're going to beat you kind of on the way that the Rangers, to an extent, beat you.
They invited six goalies. Yeah. Craig Anderson, John Gibson, Jimmy Howard, right. Ryan Miller, Jonathan Quick, and Corey Schneider. I think you'll agree with me when I say that Gibson and Howard are the bottom two of those six.
Yeah, Anderson probably in there too, Drew. I mean, I think their top three talent goalies are Quick, Schneider, and Miller.
Well, rank the goaltenders
for me.
Miller's been
poor, but I think Miller gets an invite to the team because of what he's done, and maybe he doesn't start.
I was going
to
say, based on recent performance, I mean, it seems like Quick, Schneider, and Anderson should be their top three.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Miller gets, again, that loyalty factor. I think Quick's a starter. I think Schneider's probably the second best talent-wise, and then we're going to see him in New Jersey. Like, maybe he just tears it up there.
New Jersey, of course, Lou Lamoriello has a role with USA Hockey. It's David Poile's team, the general manager of Nashville, but Lou Lamoriello will certainly have an ear, I'm certain, about
for
that.
Sure.
But, like, I mean, it's goaltending. I mean, it's the envy of the world in terms of goaltending.
Yeah, depth-wise for sure.
Depth-wise, I mean, is Craig Anderson really? I mean, can you leave Craig Anderson off this roster based on how he's played the last number of years?
I mean, no, but when you look at the talent that's in front of him, I mean, he's the odd man out here.
Really? Yeah. Over Ryan Miller still?
Well, you don't know what's going to happen with Buffalo this year too, Drew, and that's going to be a factor as well. Maybe Miller's that bad, but the truth is if Miller's that bad, maybe they want him there as the third guy, and he probably won't play in any event. I mean, you know, they have options, so that's a huge factor. Their defense is really good, and their offense is solid. I mean, it's a pretty – I think their defense is better than it was in 2010. Their goaltending, I don't know if you can be any better than Miller was in that tournament, though. I mean, it's a very short period, small sample, right? So,
sure.
But on offense, I mean, they have some talent, but they're not in the Canada's realm.
What does Bufflin have to do to make this team?
Lose about 60 pounds, in all honesty, because if he can lose the weight, he can skate as a big guy and be a quarterback in the power play. You can play some forward and really be a flexible guy. And he could be a really good 8 or 7 guy on a defense because he can play forward in defense and he can allow you to have a little bit of flexibility. But all indications are he's not likely to make the team because he can't move at his weight right now. He can't move enough around the big guys to be – he can't move around the small guys to be effective enough. So the big guys would be a huge factor.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, last Olympics on the smaller ice, the Jets took a guy – I mean, sorry, the Jets. Canada took a Chris Pronger there. And if it's on the big ice, I don't think he makes the team.
Very possible.
Then you look at the – so, you know, what's the key for the Team USA then? Is it just a matter of sort of playing their system and getting the good goaltending?
Yeah, I mean, Bielsma is going to want to play – he can't play a Pittsburgh style, really.
Right.
He can't.
They don't have the offense for it.
Yeah, I don't know if they can – they can't be trading. And then his teams in Pittsburgh have had issues with defending. So it's going to be a little bit of a change in that respect as well.
Is Canada still your favorite?
I think at the end of the day, Drew, Canada still is the favorite because we talk about, you know, the holes on the left side and the goaltending questions. It's very possible that the goaltending gets sorted out, Remus, and the goaltending gets sorted out and two of these really still good defensemen slot in there. One guy moves to the left side and their offense is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think Canada's depth is way above and beyond everyone else. I mean, the guys that they're going to be playing on the third and fourth lines could be, you know, first line players on some other teams. But I really like a USA squad. I think they've got a lot of, you know, they've got a lot of hard nosed guys, especially on forward, and they got guys that will be able to grind it out on the third and fourth lines. And what's going to be important is those role players that you have on the third and fourth lines. You can't just roll out skill. You need those guys to contribute and get in the dirty areas.
Worth noting, of course, that Canada has a very easy preliminary round draw.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I'm not sure that's good.
Like, they play Finland, like, in their group is Finland, Norway, and some lower-level qualifier. I don't even know what team would be lower-level than Norway, but...
Canada's good when they're challenged, though.
Yeah.
That's when they wake up.
Fair enough, but
the
I mean...
Last time, they had to win back-to-back. They had to go, Germany, Russia, on back-to-back nights, and everybody was worried they'd lose in the quarters. And then they played Slovakia, and then they played U.S. in the final. But they, you know, remember the Czech game in 2002 when they had to be woken up and they tied the Czechs because they were kind of sleepy. They got killed by Sweden in the first game. So sometimes I kind of like them being challenged early. So I'm a little bit skeptical about that.
The other group features the Russians, the U.S., the Slovaks, and a qualifier.
Well, I mean, you know, that's...
Yeah, I was a big fan of Slovakia back in 2010, but... You know, a lot of their guys. I mean, their
hockey program has collapsed. Apparently,
you had before Dimitra, Gabrick, Chara, Hosa, and some of those guys are getting a bit older, and they don't quite have the core that they did.
And the final pool will feature the Czech Republic, Sweden, Switzerland, and a qualifier. The way it works is the top two teams from each pool make it to the quarterfinals, and then the next best two teams. So, I mean...
Canada shouldn't have an issue with that.
Well, Canada can't
have
an issue with that.
But the U.S., Slovakia, Russia one's interesting.
Well, I think U.S. and Russia should take that. The Slovak hockey program just hasn't developed
but,
the next...
Halak has an amazing game. Like, you don't know.
Fair enough. But the U.S.
The
I mean,
Swiss, too. I wouldn't sleep on the Swiss.
Well, I think the hardest pool is the Czech, Sweden, Switzerland, and a qualifier pool. I mean, granted, the Czech Republic, their hockey program has really fallen on hard times since 98 as well. Uh-huh. But, I mean, we can't sleep on the... I mean, the Swiss are... First of all, they're very good in international play because we've seen it. Yeah. And secondly, we've seen they're developing more NHLers than ever before. You know, if you look at their orientation camp, it's not a who's who, but there's at least
some
names on it.
Because Russia at home, too. I mean, Russia's flaws, but Russia at home is going to be dangerous.
Well, Russia's got a lot of talent there, and this is their tournament to win. I mean, like this is Ovechkin has had this circled on his calendar.
This is his Crosby Vancouver.
That's right. Yeah. This is his. I mean, he's a hero.
Crosby wasn't that good in Vancouver, by the way.
Well,
no, he had. But we're saying he actually had a terrible tournament, yeah. And then ended up scoring that goal.
Scored the goals. That's all that matters at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm, right.
But I mean, we know that if Ovechkin, for whatever reason, the NHLers weren't going to Russia, Ovechkin had made it perfectly clear he's just leaving the Caps and going to play in it.
Going home.
He's going home.
The thing about the Russians, I think they're obviously very top heavy with Datsyuk, Malkin, Ovechkin, and Kolachuk, but I'm not sure how strong their defense is, and especially their lower end forwards. There's a huge drop off there, and those guys are going to be playing big minutes.
And they have to satisfy the KHL and throw a bunch of KHL guys in there because they want to make sure they stay true to the homeland and such. They do. I mean, they're going to throw the Radulovs and such, and they can play on the big ice and they can be factors. But remember, you're going to see some guys on that team you've never seen before.
Well, that's just it. Some politics will inevitably play into it for the Russians, and that's not that'll be at their detriment.
I think so.
Especially, I mean, you're right. Their defense is certainly vulnerable. That defense there is not comparable to anything else that most of the other teams are bringing to the table.
That's right.
And that's a problem that the Russians have. And if Sergei Bobrovsky turns, is back to being Sergei Bobrovsky.
Goaltending issue also.
Goaltending, I mean,
it's been an issue for them for past few Olympics, right? I mean, Nabokov was terrible last time.
Sure.
And they had Khabibulin before that, did Brizgalov play? I mean, every time I look, it's a goaltender who's got because unreliable.
Behind Bobrovsky, it's Varlamov, right? I can't think of another Russian goaltender.
Yeah, might be right.
Yeah, I mean, and, he's got a lot of talent and he's young, but he hasn't really proven anything, especially on that stage.
Where does Briz go, too?
Brizgalov's not.
Didn't make the orientation camp.
Yeah, but I mean, again, goalies, though.
Yeah.
He carries it up like he did in Phoenix. What do you do? Are you going to have an option?
I don't think he's going to get signed in the NHL.
I mean, that doesn't mean he won't make the team, though, because he goes back to the KHL, has a great year, and they put him in because...
Politics. Russian politics. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Last night I stood at your doorstep, trying to figure out what went wrong. You just slipped something into my palm there.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Busy, busy morning for a Saturday in late July here, gentlemen.
Really seems like the hockey season just doesn't end.
It doesn't.
I mean, the off season is probably arguably busier than the regular season with all the news that we've been having every day, free agent signings, Olympics. It's great.
Yeah.
How is Aziz's chair today? Is it comfortable?
Well, he doesn't have a computer, which is a big factor for me.
Really?
Other than that, I mean, I've been using my phone, so I've been getting by.
That's good. I'm glad that you've been able to survive that hardship in life.
Yeah, doing a radio show without a computer in front of you, who would have thought?
It's okay. Thanks for that, Remo. Anyways, some other news and notes from around the NHL this week. I want to start in, combination of Vancouver and Montreal. Gilles Loupien was the agent for for Roberto Luongo for the past two decades, give or take. And him and Luongo decided to part ways amicably earlier this week. Mm-hmm. Roberto said to him, it's time for me to hear a different voice. Sort of like how a golfer and his caddy will part ways after too long.
I don't even know if
time.
It was a different voice for Luongo to hear as much as a different voice for Mike Gillis to hear.
Well, fair enough. That's a good comment. Gilles Loupien was not shy in his comments about Mike Gillis. Just here's the quote it's a very good article. We'll tweet it out. It's from the Globe and Mail, our good friend Roy McGregor. He says... This is what Loupien says about Mike Gillis. I played on a team, Montreal, with 9 Hockey Hall of Famers, Loupien said. I've never seen a star treated like that. I think personally he's been treated like a piece of paper, a fourth line player. Did Mike Gillis wrong Roberto Luongo? Is Gilles Loupien right about his comments?
If you take out the money factor, people are like, oh, he should just suck it up, he's making money. But if you take out the money factor and you look at it on a personal basis in terms of Roberto Luongo, the person and relationships and how he's been treated, yeah, I think he hasn't been treated well. And, you know, they essentially tried to kind of run him out of town, but wouldn't take what they were offered, which was probably fair market value at the time. And then they realized that they could get more for Schneider. I don't know why it took so long. And then they made that move, and, you know, they basically shattered his confidence. And now they're trying to bring it back. So, I mean, well, they're trying to do it all for the benefit of themselves. And, I mean, I understand Luongo at the end of the day plays for the Canucks, but they handled this as poorly as could possibly be, Drew.
Couple more quotes. So, I mean, the fans in Vancouver had really turned on Luongo because they're very, you know, they're pretty fair weather fans out there on the West Coast mm-hmm. in Vancouver. And Lupien says this. He says it could have been handled differently by the Canucks organization. A decade ago in Montreal, then general manager Bob Gainey called out those who were ripping Canadiens defenseman Patrice Brisebois, calling them, quote-unquote, I don't know if I can say this last word on air, gutless blank.
Yeah, yeah.
And saying, we don't need those people. We don't want those people. In Vancouver, Lupien said, they didn't say a word. You know, should Mike Gillis have come out and defended his goaltender?
I think throughout they didn't handle it well. I mean, even last year when Schneider was the guy, they kept throwing Luongo back in there. It's like they tried to create a circus. Yeah, you know, he probably should have, Drew, and he should have traded him when he had the chance and just got rid of the contract, and he didn't, and he held out for more. And then he got his, you know, he got the pick for Schneider. Yeah, I mean, it was poorly managed, Drew, and they've had to come back and ask kind of for forgiveness. And they still rely on Luongo to get him where they need to go, especially on a team that's a little bit, you know, is aging a bit now. Sure. So
let me continue with Lupien. The fired agent, that being Lupien, says he understands the business both from Gillis' point of view and from Luongo's, but he feels strongly that there was never any need for such drawn-out drama and angst over the possibility of a trade.
Keep in mind that Lupien's not as angry, likely, because as far as I know, he'll be getting his commission each year based on the contract, because it's the commission goes to the agent who signs the contract. So Breeson and J.P. Barrie, that's Pat Breeson and J.P. Barrie, are like
getting a
management cut, but sure, not something the likes of what Lupien's right. still receiving.
Not any percentage points of Luongo's contract. Right. It's okay. This is Lupien again. It's okay to say you're going to trade someone, he says, but then trade him. If I want to sell my car and I want to get a good price for it, I don't say my car is always in the garage. There's something wrong with it. No one will want to buy it. You either say your car is the best car you ever had or you say nothing. Sort of really sums up in one paragraph there how badly Mike Gillis misplayed the Roberto Luongo situation.
He didn't cut his losses. And, you know, he signed that. If he didn't sign that contract, I bet you he would have been more apt to get rid of it.
But he wears it because, I mean, we saw that he couldn't just buy out Luongo. The Canucks, Aquilini said he wouldn't let him do it.
Well,
because the move, I mean.
Right. But at the same time, there were offers for Luongo. And I'm saying if he didn't sign the deal, he didn't want to admit the deal was as bad as it was.
Well,
he didn't.
Then he's fooling himself.
Well, it's an investment theory, right?
Quickly before we head to cheers and jeers in a couple of minutes, Dave Nonis signs a new contract with the Toronto Maple Leafs. He gets a new 5-year contract. They rip up the old contract. He gets 5 years when he still had 3 years left on the existing contract.
And Dave Nonis, they came to Dave Nonis. It wasn't like he was like, I need a new deal. As far as from what I heard from Dave Nonis being interviewed, so they came to him, Tim Lewicki came to him and said, you know, we need to get this long-term deal. And I think Dave Nonis was like, okay.
It's like, yes, I will take an extra 2 years of employment guaranteed. Any possible rationale for the Leafs making this move?
I think Tim Lewicki wants to, you know, he's all about the perception of the organization and the structure and making sure everybody's taken care of. And he's been really bombastic about going there and hasn't been that well received. I mean, I don't know how much Tim Lewicki knows about hockey. I think Dave Nonis has done a really nice job there. But generally in management, you need to make sure that he continues to do a good job, and then you can extend him. I don't think he's going anywhere. He's in arguably the best GM job in town and in the business. So it was kind of an odd move. If I'm Dave Nonis, I'm signing that contract every day and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, it seemed a bit unnecessary. I mean, he hasn't really proved too much. I mean, the Leafs unexpectedly had a great season last year. Yeah. But, I mean, hey, they made a few moves this offseason, signing David Clarkson. And re-signing Tyler Bozak.
I'm not sure those are great moves.
Cutting Grubowski. Hey, those are the moves that they made, and that's what you judge them on. But whether it warranted a new 5-year deal, there's nothing wrong with the waiting a bit till after this year to see how they perform and how these contracts look in the long term.
That's right.
So it'll be, I mean, it's one of those head-scratchers there in Toronto again. Talk that Cody Franson might be on the way out of Toronto.
Well, cap issues.
What about their defense issues?
yeah, I mean, factor as well. I like Cody Franzen. I think he'd be a nice pickup for many teams in the National Hockey League. If played well in his role, you know, I mean, the guy isn't the best skater, but he's more physical than you think, and he's got a nice shot. He can move the puck. I like his game. He's an NHL defender, so I'm certain there's a lot of teams there would be happy to have him.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at the Leafs organization on the back end, and there's not an overwhelming – first of all, there's not an overwhelming amount of defensemen, period, and there's not an overwhelming amount of quality defensemen.
Fraser's arbitration right now, on his way to arbitration. Koska left. You know, Gunnarsson just resigned.
Yeah, and they got Paul Ranger.
Yeah, whatever. But, I mean, Morgan Rielly is, you know, what's the expectations for him this year?
Well, that's a big one. I mean, are they going to rush him?
Yeah.
They might have to.
You never have to.
You never have to, but if you look at the defense and if you want to replicate the playoff run or making the playoffs like they did last year.
Well, then to talk about Phaneuf leaving, well, I mean, he's a UFA after this year, and there's talk. Most people think he's not going to stay. Then there's another huge hole, regardless of what you think of Phaneuf. I mean, there's a huge hole to fill there.
Sure. And that's, a lot of the problem with going into...
But we talked about it with Little. I mean, do you pay a guy because you're worried about the hole, or do you pay him because you value what he provides? I mean, it doesn't mean you can't be both. Doesn't mean you can't be both, but...
Or the third thing is, how do you replace that guy? I mean, you know, and that's a good question the Jets had to weigh and answer in the course of the negotiations.
You know,
how do they replace Blake Wheeler if they let him go? How do they replace Brian Little?
For sure.
And they're not easily replaceable, especially, you know, in this market in the NHL. You know, and that's always the sort of conundrum that these general managers face on a day-in, day-out basis.
For sure.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stick like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pulk.
Now, growing up, Drew, you have a few favorite players. Gretzky, number one, and then you have some other guys who are below Gretzky. one of those guys was Dougie Waite. Especially in the Oilers. You know, the Jets left town, and I love watching the Oilers play. And Dougie Waite was a really interesting player to watch, really good passer, never really shot it too much. But I always loved the way he saw the ice, and one of the best, I think, passers really of his generation, and sometimes goes under the radar a little bit. I'm happy to see that he was elected to the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, and I think that's well-deserved, and cheer to him.
You know, I said earlier this week, I thought a lot of those guys from the 96 World Cup team will be getting to the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. But my cheer, very similar cheer, I'm going to cheer Pavel Bure for getting his number retired by the Canucks. And notice how I'm not cheering the Canucks for retiring the numbers. Say what you want about retired numbers. He was a great. He was one of the top players in the league when he played. It was unbelievable speed, and it was so exciting every time he touched a puck. So Pavel Bure, my cheer.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers by cheering Dominic Moore, his second annual fundraiser, Smash Fest, which is a ping pong tournament featuring a bunch of NHLers. Over 25 current and former NHLers raised over $100,000 for research into rare cancers and concussions. He's back in the NHL. He took a year off after losing his wife to cancer. So good for Dominic Moore. The NHL is a better place with him back in it, and good for him on raising over $100,000 for those two worthwhile causes. That's it for this Saturday and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. Big thank you to Anton Thun, Brian Little's agent and managing director of M5 Sports, for having joined us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of that interview or any of the show, it will be available both on illegalcurve.com and on tsn1290.ca. Reminder, you can follow us on Twitter. Big thanks to everybody who participated on Twitter. Love us or hate us, we do appreciate the comments. At Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve is the Facebook page. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Michael Remus filling in for Ezra Ginsberg. For producer Tim getting us on and off the air like the expert that he is. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.